You're listening to the Dangerous Jobs Podcast. My name is Apollonia Rockwell, and I'll be your host as we dive deep into conversations with owners, safety experts, and boots on the ground from hazardous work sites and jobs around the country to learn what it really takes to make safety achievable in dangerous industries. On this show, we love talking about company culture, total worker safety, and greatness in the workplace. Let's get started. Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us on another episode of Dangerous Jobs, hosted by me, Apollonia Rockwell. And I'm really excited today, Andrew. We have a special guest today. For the audience who doesn't know, everyone, we have Andrew Boyd, who is a cybersecurity consultant, amongst many other things. And first of all, thank you, Andrew, for being here today. How are you?
Doing well. Happy to be here. Thanks.
Absolutely. Yeah. So security consultant, Andrew, tell us, like, what does that even mean? What is it all that you do, and how in the world did you get here? And I'm so excited for the audience. You also got into some interesting work, going from a desk job as an engineer and going into tree climbing and work like that. So there's just so much that we're going to dive into. But first of all, Andrew, yes, so happy that you're here. Tell the audience a little bit about yourself and how you got here.
Sure. Yeah, sure. So security consultant at this point, or what I'm doing now, is what we call a penetration tester or a red teamer. It's cybersecurity related. So I'm one of the guys that gets paid to break into companies and then report on how we did it, mostly from a cybersecurity perspective, sometimes from a physical perspective, see if we can, you know, bypass badge readers and those sorts of things. But that's security consultant is generally, that's what it is. Penetration testing, red teamings, another term for it. So,
and what kind of companies do you do that for? I mean, that has to be across various industries. I mean, what are the top ones that you work with?
Well, I got to be careful not to say too much, of course, but law firms, law firms are not unusual. Manufacturing facilities. I did it for General Electric for a while. Everything from small businesses that are on the order of a few million in revenue a year, all the way up to, you know, the largest companies in the world, have those sorts of roles. So,
yeah, that's a lot. You're a smart guy. That takes a lot, the cybersecurity piece. And so when doing research on you, I saw that you're this engineer, you're going through, you're working behind a desk. And a lot of people thought that you were kind of crazy for taking a step back at one point of your life and getting into tree climbing work, first of all, what all was that? Why did you do that with your background? Sure. What caused you to do something like that? And tell us about your experience with that.
Sure. So I started off in software engineering. Landed maybe in a bucket that a lot of people do, where it was, hey, go to college, get a good job, and go into computers, do something there, and you'll do really well in life. Well, after 10 years of doing that and enjoying the problem solving aspect of that, enjoying writing software from a problem solving perspective, solving interesting problems, doing interesting things and working with interesting technology. After doing that for so long, it was mostly the desk and being stationary and isolated that that was very difficult. So one thing I always enjoyed was working with other people, working outside, doing something hands-on, and tree work kind of landed in a really interesting confluence of those things, where it has a lot of the problem-solving aspects to it, to do it well and to do it safely, but then also has that very physical, very active outdoors aspect to it as well. I had a friend that did trees, and I worked a few weekends with him, and I was like, this is really interesting. Maybe I can work some weekends doing this on my own. And sure enough, that's what I did. I was able to just start talking to friends and build a business doing it on the weekends. And then eventually left my full-time role behind the desk to climb trees. So did that for a few years. And now I'm kind of in an in-between phase where I'm doing a little bit of both.
Oh, I love it. I love it because you have your, you'll have an interesting perspective, I think, you know, versus somebody that this is all that they did maybe is immediately worked in this type of industry, but going from behind the desk, going from analyzing risk in an office to being, you know, in different senses, in different respects, sure. But then being out there and seeing this type of work, which just so you know, I mean, you probably do already know, but I mean, OSHA deems tree climbing, tree work as one of the most hazardous industries.
Yes.
I keep track on the, quite frankly, the death records on OSHA websites. And I still see tree climbing, tree work as one of the top, is one of the, still the leading causes, leading industries. Yeah. And so I've actually never had the opportunity to talk with somebody engaged with that type of work. So tell me what you saw culture-wise. Going from behind the desk to engaging in this type of work, you're always, I feel like you're just the type of guy, you're always analyzing risk. And so what was that transition like? And what was your experience like?
Sure. So I think coming from behind the desk in cybersecurity and that sort of thing, we call it the evil bit. So you've always got that, you've always got this mindset of how can things break or how can things go wrong? And that's one of the things that made me good as a, you know, cybersecurity analyst, or, you know, security consultant is to look at, some piece of software that someone built and say, how can that thing break? You know, how does that work and how does that function and what can I do to make that, you know, do something else? So, then coming to tree work, you're looking at trees and, you know, they're hanging over a house or, you know, there's deadwood or whatever it is, any number of things. And it's very much a similar approach of, okay, how can this thing fall? How can this go wrong? How can this scenario not go the way I need it to or want it to? So I think that perspective was very different than a lot of folks in tree work. What I've noticed in tree work is there are some people that do that and some people that really have that quality and a lot of really, just very quality climbers and tree workers that I know that really care about what they're doing. And then kind of the other half, you know, it's probably not a 50-50 split, I'm sure. But then there's a lot of people that I'm aware of in the industry that kind of came up in the industry. They started doing trees when they were 18 and they were taught by, you know, whoever they worked with.
Dad.
And they just kind of, Right. And they just kind of picked up whatever that company did and they didn't bother to do research and look into, okay, how are other people doing these things? What are best practices around these things? They just kind of did it how they learned it. And a lot of really bad practices come from that, that I've seen. So there are some really good companies. I was fortunate that I started with my own company, started on the weekends. And so I had complete control of here's how we're going to work. Here's, you know, here are all the safety things we're going to do. And there was a learning process there, but it was, you know, we're going to wear chaps. We're always putting two hands on a chainsaw. You'd be amazed at probably 80 to 90% of people in tree work will run a chainsaw one handed. And it's, I think it's really sad.
When you said two hands, I thought, oh, isn't that common sense?
No, it's not.
Duh.
And people say, oh, these chainsaws are designed that way. It's a top handle chainsaw. So the way it's balanced, it is balanced and you can hold it with one hand very comfortably. But the point is that it's compact and easy to maneuver with in a tree. It's never intended to be run one handed. If that thing kicks back and, there's, I can't cut my left arm off if I'm holding onto the saw with it, you know, like it just can't happen. But that's a very common injury in tree work and people think I'm nuts. They're like, oh, it's slower. I bet I'm way faster than you in the tree. And I just say, I don't care. You know, it doesn't matter. I got kids at home that I want to go to and I want to have all of my appendages when I get there. So,
oh my gosh,
so I was fortunate enough to start my own business and be able to start it with that in mind and say, if this isn't, you know, this is how we're going to work. And if we're not going to work this way, it's not worth doing. I'd rather just go work at Walmart, you know, stocking shelves.
Absolutely.
Or go back to cybersecurity.
Oh my goodness. Well, I mean, think about it. And you've seen this scenario time and time again, where people are joining an organization, whether they're a little bit experienced, whether they're brand new, like right out of high school, and they're getting into this job where the company culture just is what you described. Like it is not, you know, it's half-ass. It's right. We're going to take risks, and that's just what our culture is about.
Yeah.
And so people do find themselves in a situation where, like you said, they're almost taught, well, this is the fastest way to do things, so this is how we're going to do it. And that's common among so many different industries. Doesn't have to be tree climbing work, things like that. That just is the culture. And I think that, you know, it was a blessing, right, that you're able to stamp your own rules and regulations, and you're able to decide, hey, this is what we're going to go by. And anyone working alongside me is going to follow these rules because it's just not worth it. But a lot of people, as you know, they just get into these company cultures where that's just what's normal. I mean, did you ever have any coworkers or heard of any scenarios where there was an incident involved? And would you mind sharing about that and kind of how it happened and the aftermath of it all?
Sure. I got to think if there were specific incidents. I know generally the people that I've worked with directly. So most of the stories that I know of are relatively indirect. So, you know, through someone that I know, they knew somebody sort of deal. Worked with a couple of folks that had incidents happen for themselves. I was never on a job site here's a really good one. Actually, now that I've kind of, you know, my brain had a chance to work for a second. So working with my buddy who had done tree work for a number of years, he ran a landscape company, got into it. And then he and I ended up working on a job together. And he said, hey, I got a contract climber. I was newer at the time. I was maybe 6 months in. So I was still getting comfortable in the tree and figuring things out. Pretty slow, but that was fine. I wasn't worried about it. But he said, hey, this guy's pretty quick. He's good. And we were doing a big tree. So I was working one half of the tree while he's working the other. Well, this guy shows up and was climbing on this job, and he climbs up, and not 10 minutes into the job, his helmet falls off because the buckle or something was broken. And it was like, you going to get your helmet back on? He's like, no, I'm good. I don't care. I'm like, okay. So I'm like, all right, well, you do you. And, you know, we're just going to be real careful. And so I'm watching the rest of the day. And then about an hour or two later, he's getting ready to rig another piece down. We got to rope it down. It's right over the garage. And he ties the rope in a certain spot. You know, there's a certain way you can tie the rope where you just run it up over a branch. But if you do it wrong, the rope will lock onto itself. he made the cut, and he didn't make sure anyone was holding the rope on the ground to keep the piece from falling. But unfortunately, he tied the rope wrong, so it locked in the tree. So we have this piece hanging from a rope. He doesn't have a helmet on, and nobody's holding onto the rope on the ground. So we get into this nightmare. And then he's got to go try and get this rope loose. And so he's climbing up there, and then he falls, and he swings. He's attached to a rope in the tree. So anyway, it was just this whole combination of factors where it was like, you didn't pay attention. Mm-hmm. You weren't prepared. And so at that point I just said, get out of the tree. You know, I said, I'll finish this myself. Get out of here. You know? And so he gets down and he leaves, and I said, I don't ever want to see this guy again. But it was this whole, you know, just this whole day where he's climbing around, and it was just mistake after mistake after mistake. And all of it was just very simple, not paying attention. You know, I don't know if he was on drugs that day or what. You know, I don't know what it was. It was just a complete
and he's a contractor, and that's what's so tough about a lot of these companies or individuals. You know, a lot of the times it's like, well, they were on a job site following their protocols, but a contractor comes in, another small company comes in, and they're working alongside them, and they're doing it the cowboy way. And you don't have any say almost about, well, you feel like you don't have any say.
Yeah, and that's right. And that's the way I felt at first. But then after a couple of, you know, after those things started to stack up, I said, all right, hold on, this is my job and I can't have this happening. Like, you got to, you know, get out of here. So shame on me for being a little bit shy about that. As soon as his helmet came off, you know, I should have said, no, get out of here. But I didn't, unfortunately. Fortunately, you know, nothing major happened, you know, during that day, because that could have gone really wrong. Shame on me for not doing that sooner. But agreed. Yeah. You know, when you're the one that hires somebody and they come in and they're doing something that's not appropriate, it's hard to be willing to put your foot down and say, no, this is how we're going to do it. And if you're not going to do it, you need to leave.
Absolutely. You know. Absolutely. I think that that's one of the most common scenarios is there, you know, luckily nothing catastrophic, nothing serious happened with this gentleman where he was hurt or anything like that right away. And yep. It didn't escalate it to something further, because certainly you would have had that guilt, just like you have a guilt, you know, right. with the minor piece of his helmet falling off, like, oh, it was at that point I should have said something, because right. Nine times out of 10, people are doing something dangerous. And it's just this human piece in us that feels a little bit shy speaking up, putting your foot down, maybe seeming like the bad guy in the moment of, hey, I need you to stop working. Like, you can't work around me. You're not willing to follow the rules. You simply can't continue on. There's just something human about us where it's uncomfortable to stand up like that. But I think what you're saying is totally right. At that point, it is our obligation, as hard and uncomfortable as it is, to get somebody who's not willing to listen and just get them off before they hurt themselves. Yeah. Obviously.
I'll say, since that time, I haven't had an issue with it again. It's like, once you realize, like, it's your job, you get to call the shots. And once you just build that confidence a little bit, then absolutely. Now, the one thing I won't do is ask someone to do that they are uncomfortable with. You know, I'll ask people, you know, I'll say, hey, are you comfortable doing X, Y, and Z? And if they get to a point where they're not comfortable, you know, I was training a guy climbing, and you know, he was just like, yeah, I'm not sure I can get out there and feel comfortable with it. I'm worried I'm going to slip. I said, okay, I'll come up there, you know, let tap out. You'll get comfortable with it over time. And I did the climbing for that piece, you know, just because he was uncomfortable, you know? And so it just takes time to exercise those muscles and build that confidence and comfort level, with those things, even if you know it's totally safe. So, you know, a little bit of a one-way street where you want to put your foot down and say, no, we're not, you know, we're not doing any of these things in an unsafe manner. But then on the other side of that, you don't want to push people to do something that they're uncomfortable with, I think. Even if you're like, it's not a safety issue, you're going to be fine sort of deal.
Well, I completely agree with you. And I think what you're sharing tools without maybe even knowing that you're sharing tools right now, but those are great tidbits for leaders, you know, for all of us to understand, because a lot of the times I know so many foremen, so many supervisors, and you don't even have to have that title to be in charge of training another person on the job, sure. Right? There's so many people, all the new workforces, all the new faces coming in, and people are left to train the next person up, right? And so you shared a lot of great tools of like listening, really, really listening to someone's comfort level. What are they saying? What is our body language saying? If this person is, you just sense that they are not comfortable, even like you said, if it's a safe thing, but while we're training new people and you have to be in tune with the unsaid things. And when that person, you can't push someone all the way when they're learning a new trade, they're learning how to run a piece of equipment, they're learning how to tree climb, whatever it is. I think that's an awesome tool, is like really just sit back and listen, because I think all of us today are faced with training someone at some point, right? And it's just how effectively can we train them? And so can you give some other tools to that when you're working with somebody new, and you know, maybe this is like business advice that you could give, but how important it is, or maybe just some tools on how you're training somebody up in regards to the job, the safety. I mean, what goes into your training process? Because I feel like you are someone that has process and
yeah,
a little depth. Bit.
So number one, I think number one, and this is often one of the hardest that I found, first thing that comes to mind is that you as the leader or the business owner, if you're the one coordinating the job, you're the foreman, you're the, mm-hmm. you know, you're the guy who runs the tree service and you got a couple guys working for you, whatever that is. You have to follow everything exactly. You can't make compromises. So you can't say, oh, I'm going to make this cut without chaps on. Like it's just one cut, right? As soon as you do it, it's okay for everybody else to do it. And if you say, no, guys, we're wearing chaps every time we pick up a chainsaw, then, you know, and then you go make a cut without wearing chaps or chainsaw pants or whatever, then mm-hmm. instantly that makes it okay for everybody all the time. Right. And it just becomes normal at that point. So you yourself have to be rigid and set the example that, you know, if you get in a position, you're like, oh, I didn't think I was going to need the chainsaw in this specific situation. I thought I was going to do it with the handsaw. I don't have my chaps on. Crap. I got to get out of the tree, throw the chaps on, climb back up, like waste the time, so to speak. But that builds the culture, like, and that demonstrates how important it is that I think to your team and to the people that are working with you and for you, how important that is to you, and how important it is for the culture, and that you're not going to get away with, you know, any scenario, right? And all of these things, whether it's chaps or, you know, the way you run the chainsaw, you know, all of these safety things that we talk about, mm-hmm. it's not that any one thing is going to save your life every time, right? It, you know, yeah. It's like, okay, could you make the cut without chaps and be fine? Yeah. Like, I'm not saying you're going to, you know, people do it all the time, mm-hmm. but the point is that it's just that, you know, it's that layered safety and layered approach to, and mindset around, we're just going to do it well so that we don't have to worry about certain things. Now, not that mm-hmm. chaps means you can run the chainsaw however you want, you know, and do dumb things with it. You still have to run the chainsaw the right way, but it just layers in that mentality of, we're going to be careful. We're going to pay attention to what we do, and we're not going to do dumb things, is the way I see it. So I think number one, you know, that's the biggest thing that I think of, is that you as the boss, as the leader, have to be doing the things that you're saying everyone else has to do.
I think you said something so great there. You shared so many different examples that just ties into one big piece. When you were speaking there, I was thinking about the culture aspect, and you said it the best, is whatever the leadership, whether there's one leader in a small company and, you know, everybody's following this one, you know, the owner of the company, maybe he's still involved, he or she are still involved in operations. Whatever you do is what the team will do. Whatever you allow, the team will accept that level of risk. And so I think you just broke the code really in like the most simple way in my mind. When companies come to me and they come to, you know, our organization, they're like, we just have bad culture. We don't know how to fix it. Or this is what our culture is like. We don't know what to do about it. How can we fix this? How can we solve this? It's like, it's as simple as what you just said. Mm-hmm. What are the leaders doing in the organization?
Right.
Take a look there. Yeah. That's
well,
the culture.
And the one thing that's interesting about that, I think, if it's not the leaders in the organization, that's one way to make yourself a leader in an organization. Yeah. So if you're working for a company, if you're just the ground guy working for a tree company or, you know, whatever, you know, whatever scenario we're talking about, if your leadership is not doing that, mm-hmm. You know, not doing what they should be doing, and you're listening to this podcast and you're saying, you know, how can I be better? How can I do this? Well, you just do the right things that they should be doing. And over time, I think you become the leader. People start looking to you. Now, some people are going to think you're nuts. I worked with a company not too long ago, and I was a little bit horrified because anyway, they weren't. So they were going up in a bucket truck every day. No helmet, no harness in the bucket truck, one hand in the chainsaw. They didn't know how to use two hands on a chainsaw. I don't think... You know, I don't
think
they
knew
how. Yeah. I mean, it was just everything was cut and throw.
What? It's
nuts. Anyway,
you're horrified.
So I worked with them a few times, and you know, I was like, okay, I didn't know them. I worked a few days. I was like, all right, let me see if, you know, let me just kind of get a feel for, is anything going to change if I'm here for a bit? And they're like, oh, do you want to do the bucket work today? I'm like, yeah, I'm going to use a rope. so that I can put two hands on the saw. And then do you guys have a harness for the bucket truck? Because I'm wearing that. I'm not going up without it. And they're like, oh, nope. You want to wear that? Yeah, I think it's under the seat of the truck. And we pulled it out. It was still in the bag. It was brand new. It had never been opened.
I was like, either it's rusty dusty and it has holes in it from termites or it's in the bag.
Yeah, no.
It's gonna be one of the two.
I mean, it was good. It was legit. Like, it was just a couple years, you know, it was maybe 2 years old or something. Like, it was all good. It was intact. And so I put the harness on. But just the looks I got after that day, I was just like, okay, like, that's it. Like, I'm done here. Because, you know, it's one thing if you start doing those things and people start to say, oh, you know what, maybe we should do that. You know, and over time you might see that, but in this case, that wasn't it. So if you are, you know, maybe on the flip side of that, if you are the guy that's coming into work and you're like, you know what, we need to be paying more attention to safety standards and, we should be wearing our hard hats at the appropriate time, you know, whatever it is. And nothing changes ever, then maybe that's a cue to go somewhere else, right? It's either, you'll either become a leader and that will begin to be recognized. Like, if leadership says, yeah, you know what, we need more of this, you know, maybe they'll promote you and that sort of thing. But if not, maybe that's a cue to say, they don't really care about us, right? You know, they don't really care about the workers here, you know, because I think that's what that is. It's a reflection of how much the bosses care about the workers. If that kind of stuff is allowed, you know, if everything's just cowboy. Now, there's an element of, you know, there can be disagreements on some safety things, certainly. Yeah, yeah. And we can debate, you know, should we do this? Should we not? And there can be disagreement on things, you know, but there's an element of culture that surrounds, is there a safety culture at all? Right. And I think that matters.
So. I think that, oh my gosh, I love what you said there, because so many people do feel like they're stuck. They are the worker, and they would be like listening to this podcast like, oh, well, that is the culture here. It is unsafe here. And because it's unsafe, that's why I'm unsafe. And that's why I'm doing all these things. But you just hit it perfectly, is that you need, you know, I feel like that's the freaking take home of today's podcast. Like, if I could drop a bomb, I need a buzzard every time, like, a key point is just shouted. Sure. the way you worded that is that what I just heard you say is be the leader, whether you are the leader or not. Everybody has the power within them to be a leader. And even that untitled leader, like you just said, when you're doing the right thing, and sure, if that's not recognized in the right respect, then that's your cue to go if you don't feel like that's it. But when you hold yourself to a certain standard and you conduct yourself in a way where you are, you know, doing the right thing, you're doing the safe thing, you care about yourself and you care about those who you work with, people will turn to that person naturally, because that's the natural leader. And that's who we all aspire to be, or at least the people most likely listening to this podcast, because they're listening, you're probably listening because you want to get better. You want, you know, you're into self-improvement. And so I love what you just said. If you don't have that type of leadership right now, which you probably don't, no organization is perfect. If you don't have that, then be that person. There's nothing stopping you.
Yeah, and I would say don't be arrogant about it. Don't, you know, don't come in and say like, oh, I'm going to start doing it this way and everybody should do it this way. You know, just do it. Just do what you know is right. And then, you know, as people start to ask questions or whatever, you know, hey, yeah, this is why I'm doing this way. Or I heard this thing, or I looked at, I researched this safety standard, or you know, whatever it is, you know, then you start to talk about it. I wouldn't come in and try and, you know, just be a jerk and say, no, this is how it has to be done. Right. But, and then the second thing I would say, that, you know, everybody wants to feed their family. Everybody needs a job to make money, or your own business or whatever, right? You need income, right, to support yourself and your family. But I think one thing that's really powerful is when you get to the point that you're willing to be fired for, you know, the right thing, for what you know is right. When it's a hard place to get to. It's a very difficult place to get to, because there's just fear involved, you know, with like, oh man, if I get fired, what am I going to do? I got to find a job, whatever.
Those are all,
but when you get to that point, it can be very, very powerful. You know, in your thought process, decision making, and your actions.
Yeah, man, there's a lot of take homes, and I really appreciate you're a great communicator. You know, you really are, Andrew.
Well, thank you.
I think that I think you say maybe a complex message very, very simply. And really what I heard from you today is you can lead today, whether whatever position, title, experience that you have, you don't have to be a jerk about it. You don't have to be arrogant about it. You can become a leader today with how you conduct yourself, with how you, what you allow, what you don't, and certainly, and let itself play out, let it play out, whether the company accepts that or not, but it's the right thing to do. And then, you know, so I think that that's key. And looking out for not just yourself, but the person that you're working next to, and having that courage, having that confidence to step up, say something, and shut down. Like, you know, in OSHA standards, OSHA's world, it would be a stop the job or stop work. And it doesn't even have to be stopping a whole project. It's just simply pausing and saying, hey, I'm just looking out, like, I'm just telling you this. I'm just looking out for you. Like, you need to do it the right way, or just don't be here at all. But right. I think having those two pieces, having the courage to stand up for yourself and the person you're working with, but also leading today, are really the two key messages I got from talking with you, speaking with you. So, any other final things on your mind, any other pieces of advice you would have for boots on the ground? I feel like a lot of people can resonate with just not knowing how to stand up and not knowing how to be that leader. I think a lot of people might be experiencing that on the job site and just how uncomfortable it as it is in a new organization to do the right thing, do the safe thing. So, I mean, yeah, just any advice you'd have for that person.
I think it's just a matter of building your confidence. It took a while for me. Yeah. But when you see, don't wait until someone almost dies to have that confidence. Right.
Yeah.
You know, I described that close call where the guy's in the tree and his helmet fell off and all this stuff. And it took me too long to kick him out of the tree. You know, I would call that too close of a call. It shouldn't have taken that for me to recognize, you know what, he shouldn't have been there in the first place, or, you know, he should have gotten down quickly, you know, or I should have told him just, no, get out of the tree. Like, if you're not going to put your helmet back on, just, you know, go home. Don't wait until you've got that close call.
Yeah, no, that's powerful advice. It's simple, but it's extremely powerful, because every single catastrophic, serious, even if it's, you know, down to, you know, a near hit, a near miss, like you just described, every single scenario or case I've investigated or worked with, there's the person that was there was like, I should have said something. I should have said something sooner.
Right. And so, well, and the funny thing is, go ahead. I was going to say, the funny thing is, frequently we notice it, and like you have that feeling where you're like, oh, something doesn't seem right. I wonder if I should say something. You know, it's not just like that post incident remorse. A lot of times it's like you recognize when, you know, you can identify the point exactly that like, oh, like I felt it then, but it wasn't enough for me to say something, right? As soon as you have that, stop. And that was, you know, that's one thing I tried to communicate to my crew was like, if anybody sees something that you're like, hey, that doesn't seem right, stop. And everybody has to be willing to stop. And we go in, you know, we go into the job knowing that we may stop at some point. If somebody says, hey, this doesn't seem right. You know, you if you go into it with that mindset,
I think that's great advice too. Going into the job with that expectation, it's how you frame the day. Hey, we're going, this is the job at hand today. These are the tasks at hand today. Hey, keep in mind, when something comes up, if something comes up that you just have that feeling, that you can't even put a title on it, that feeling, that intuition that you have in your stomach that something is wrong, we're going to stop today. Okay. That's the expectation. Let's get to it. And so I think that is really great advice for a current leader, leading a crew, leading a company, or you are just working alongside somebody and, you know, you're taking that leadership into your own hands. I think that is that's great advice. That's priceless advice. That could save yourself or someone else's life on the job site. So I really appreciate you, Andrew. I appreciate your insight, and your willingness to share some stories. Thank you for telling us those things. I really appreciate it. And guys, we're going to, include Andrew's contact information. I hope you're okay with that, Andrew, if we can post your, LinkedIn so that way people could reach out to you. But we're going to link Andrew's information so that way you can stay connected with him, see what he's up to moving forward. But thank you so much for today. Thank you so much for listening.